you could speak into the mic, there's a three-minute period here. Thank you.
I understand that this... Is this good?
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, sir.
I understand this will be actually addressed. I did not know that when I came down here, so at the risk of being redundant, I'll be brief. My name's Alan McKenzie. I reside at 2310 Beach Street, which is directly next door to the unfortunate structure fire that happened last Thursday, August 21st. I've received damage to mine, and unfortunately, the family next door lost their structure. In talking with neighbors about this and in community discussions, it became clear to us that the response time on this fire was inadequate. And clearly, this needs to be addressed by this board, as you are the people responsible for fire safety in Oceano. I sent an email to Karen White. I appreciate she responded. Indicated that there will be an investigation. It will be submitted to the Five Cities Fire Board meeting on September 19th. I appreciate the Five Cities Fire Board in cooperating with us. Officials there also indicated they will investigate and submit their findings on September 19th. I encourage members of this community to address or attend, I should say, that meeting. And I would hope that this board will provide the leadership and provide the will to make sure this is followed up on and dealt with in an expedient and effective manner. This needs to happen. This is, to quote somebody, a dangerous situation. And members of our community really don't want to stand in front of their dwellings watching emergency situations drag on and on and on before they get help. I would picture yourself in front of your dwelling doing that and see if you wanted that to happen to you and put yourself in their shoes. I don't think it was a very comfortable feeling. So I will not ramble on. I understand we're going to address this. I encourage members of the community to take this to heart, to attend the meeting at Grover Beach City Council, the Five Cities Fire Authority meeting on September 19th. This needs to be addressed.
And also the Arroyo Grande City Council as well. And I do have a question, Mr. McKenzie. Do you know what the time was or how long the gap was in time from when the calls first went out until the fire truck got
there? There's a lot of estimates, okay? I can tell you that the estimates have landed anywhere from 8 minutes to 28 minutes. There was a lot of indication that when people first tried to call in, they could not get through initially, and that when they did get through, they had to run through a gauntlet of agencies before they were able to even... They recounted stories of how people were asking them for information and saying, oh, wait a minute, we'll send you over here, and then asking for more information, and then we'll say, it was harrowing for some people to try and call 911 and not get a timely response.
All right. Thank you, sir. Does anybody else have any questions for Mr. McKenzie? Thank you for coming down and sharing this with us. Thank you very much. Ms. Tacker?
I just like 1 minute, Matt. Okay. I just wanted to announce and invite your board to the Latino Outreach Council meeting tomorrow morning, Thursday, August 28th, at 8:30 a.m. at the County Government Center in room 161. I think you would find it interesting. Some general managers ago, Mr. Edwards asked to be on your agenda to make a presentation, and he'll be making that presentation tomorrow at the Latino Outreach Council, a little airport history and some of his ideas and how that could how it could help Oceano. So I encourage you to be there.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Is there any other public comment this evening? All right. We'll close public comment. There are no special presentations. We'll move on to item 7A, which is Sheriff's South Station report. I don't think Commander Wells or Donovan are here. We'll move to the Five Cities Fire Authority. Chief Heath. Good evening, Chief Heath.
Good evening, honorable board members and Director Guerrero. Me too. And then Grover Beach Dispatch received the transfer at 12:11:37. And then by the time the dispatch was completed, meaning tone out and also identifying the location of the incident, that was at 12:14:07. And our first in unit arrived at 12:17:52, which was 3 minutes and 45 seconds from the time of dispatch. And that was the engine from this station here. NFPA national standard is that we arrive at scene within 5 minutes. And so by the time our engine, our station received the call, and the guys dressed out, which is called the turnout time, and got in the engine and drove to the incident, it took them 3 minutes and 45 seconds. And we had water on the fire within a minute. The overall time from when CHP transferred the call or received the call and transferred it, and by the time our first engine arrived at scene, it was 8 minutes and 3 seconds. Which still that is an extremely long period of time, especially when you're standing there and watching a structure burn. And so because of that, I truly, I'm very contrite for what the citizens of Oceano had to deal with. And I would like to do our best to try to resolve this issue of dispatch. Any questions?
Obviously, I think that this will be taken up by the fire board, and this has been a countywide discussion for unified dispatch for a while, I think, and if you could give us some background on that.
Yes, sir. I've notified all three board members today and expressed to them what had happened, and we'll be discussing it at the next fire board meeting.
Can I say something?
Yes, please, Karen.
I was at that fire. I got there before the fire departments got there. But I was told by at least one person, legitimately, he had called, and he called and told either the sheriff's office or CHP that the fire was at 22nd and Cienega. Now, if you're 22nd and Cienega, depending on where you are, it could have been in the county location. That doesn't mean that they're not supposed to send the closest fire truck first. But it's just, there was difficulties in all directions. Yes, I was very concerned. I believe the 8 minutes and 3 seconds, because I know how long I was there before. I saw it when it started from Hayashi's, and I was in my car and I just boogied right over there. Yeah. Anyway, thank you.
So, Ricky.
Yes.
I, too, got to experience the fire because I live right across the street, and I was home for the fire. And, you know, this has been a problem with dispatch for a while, and I think that the Five Cities Fire Authority is kind of caught up in this minutia of control when it comes to dispatch. And because I've heard multiple reasons why, you know, because how people used to use their cell phones when the system was set up, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, the system doesn't work for real-time life experiences now. Is there any way of working with maybe trying to cut out the sheriff's department out of it and go directly to the Five Cities? Are you going to re-look at dispatch altogether?
Yes, ma'am. Basically, when I talked to Commander Peters today, who is in charge of dispatch for Grover Beach Police Department, who's our dispatch center, the call, anytime you use a cell phone, that call will either go directly to the dispatch center or it'll go to CHP, depending on radio towers and, you know, it's a hit and miss, basically. And this time, what happened was it went straight to CHP. And when Commander Peters talked to CHP, they understood that they should have directed that call straight to Grover Beach Dispatch. But instead, they directed it to another dispatch center, which then put it into that whirlwind. And so CHP is going to do their best to correct what happened there and try to make sure that they direct the call to the proper.
And have you had discussions with CAL FIRE as to why they did not send over that call to the right department? because my understanding is that they actually dispatched their equipment, and that's not their area, and then they went on to call the five cities.
Right. I think there was a couple of reasons that might have caused that to happen. One is what Karen has spoken.
I don't know. With the cell phone, I guess you can't. Because everybody's using a cell phone. I forget, I have a landline.
And I think that would require a huge educational piece to make sure everybody understands that there's a different emergency line other than 911.
And we have lots of tourists.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Well, I'm glad that nobody was hurt. And I thank the crew and the CAL FIRE for helping respond on this. And thank you. And yes. Please.
Board members, I just have one thing to add to what Chief Heath said. I'm not a cell phone expert by any means, or a technological expert by any means, but I was informed that the cell towers can only handle so many calls at one time, and that the delay could have had something to do with the cell tower, whichever one it is around here, that's taking the cell calls. And that's why everybody was getting a busy signal, because nothing was able to go through. So that's something else to add to the equation for cell phone.
So let me ask you, do people have a better chance if they call from a landline, a hard line?
Yes.
Because I have hard lines in my house.
Yeah, hard lines.
And most people still do have their landlines.
Yeah, but hard lines, as we all know, those are going to the dinosaur, and everybody in 20 years will be using a cell phone. So the technology...
But as far as for the average, everyday person who has a hard line in their house, it's in the case of an emergency, it's best to call from a hard line, correct?
Yeah, but it's easier to call from a cell phone because we have it on our person, rather than run back to the house to use it. But the system was initially set up before cell phones were really invented. So we're trying to use new technology into a somewhat antiquated nationwide system. So we're right in the cusp of this problem. And I'm sure we're not the only community that is experiencing the problems.
I think what we may see is the technology evolves, some triangulation, so that when they get a 911 call from cell towers, they'll be able to, because we can already do this. I see this with law enforcement a lot, where they're triangulating cells and pinpointing or close people's locations. We'll probably see something eventually.
Yeah, but I don't think any of them are there yet in fire service dispatch. So that's all I wanted to add. If anybody has any more questions.
We do have a question from the audience.
You have to come up to the mic.
The 1209 911 call that came in at 1209 was from a landline from our neighbor. So that was the earliest record that we have so far. But that makes the cell phone conversation is important. But as far as this dispatch goes, the first call that we have the record on came from a landline.
Thank you.
Okay, so Riggy, can I ask that you guys keep us posted up to date and to let us know what the changes are so we can have more of a longer discussion on it?
Absolutely. I'll be more than happy to do that.
Okay.
But I would like to also make a couple other additional comments.
Yes.
Regarding using the landline for call 911 in Oceano, even if you were to use landline in Oceano, it'll still go to Sheriff's Department. It's been that way for several years, and Grover Beach Dispatch has always dispatched Oceano Fire because Oceano contracts with Grover Beach Dispatch. And so if somebody calls 911 from their house, it'll go to the sheriff's, and the sheriff would normally transfer that call to Grover Beach. And it's worked for several years without any problems. It's just here recently we've been having some issues. Also, I wanted to express one additional thing to the McKenzie family. Even though we were taking so long getting there, and very apologetic for that, but they did an excellent job of keeping their structure cooled. They were using a garden hose. The fire that from the main house, the radiant heat was impinging against their home, and they kept that cool until we were able to get some hose lines on that. And thank you very much. That's all I have.
The other thing, too, is it's, this is not something that's isolated to Five Cities Fire. I know that at times I've called 911. I was having a physical altercation with someone, and CHP answers, okay, well, hold on, we're going to transfer you over. And, you know, when somebody's coming at you with fists, oh, sure, can you stop being attacked? I got 911 on the phone. It wasn't just the fire, and then, of course, the sheriffs did respond, but it was a good couple of minutes, it seemed like, and in time, you end up in this time warp when you're in an emergency, and it really seems like it takes a lot longer. Everything's in slow motion, and so I think it's something that's a regional issue that's affected the Five Cities Fire Authority. That's why we're talking about it tonight. But it is a regional issue.
Yes, sir.
Sure is. The cost associated with that, I have no idea what that would be.
Okay.
And you did provide us this this sheet that had the dispatch times. We'll attach this to our minutes for public record. And if any of the public wants to see it, we'll make it available on the back page. All right. Thank you, Chief. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us tonight, Chief Heath?
Yeah, I'd like to say something.
Sure.
It was CAL FIRE and the Sheriff's Office who were doing the dispatching. They're the ones who got the initial call, so they were the ones doing the dispatching. If you look at the time from when they got to Grover Beach, so the delay was not Grover Beach and Five Cities Fire Authority. The delay was the Sheriff's Office and CAL FIRE making those calls. So if you have CAL FIRE and sheriffs doing it, you're not going to get any better service. If you look at this, if you look at this time span,
the call, it doesn't matter which dispatch center is the main dispatch for the fire department. If you dial 911, there's a good chance it's going to go to CHP, and that's where it gets lost in the system. So it doesn't matter if we're using CAL FIRE for dispatch or Grover Beach, there's still that chance. It's a matter of having CHP understanding where the incident is and which dispatch center is proper for dispatching.
I agree. Thank you. Anything else, Karen?
No, I'll shut my mouth.
Ricky, is there anything else you'd like to add this evening? Otherwise, calls, anything to announce this?
I didn't bring any stats with me this evening. I apologize for that. I'll make sure to bring that to the next board meeting. But other than that, things are good.
Next Five Cities Fire Authority meeting is September 19th, Grover Beach. Is that at 2 o'clock still?
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you.
Have a good evening.
You too. Thank you very much,
sir.
Move on to item number 7C, the report of the OCSD operations. Field Supervisor Tony Maricino. Good evening, Tony.
Good evening, Board. So since we last spoke, we had 8 work orders, 14 USAs. 6 customer service calls. We had an after-hours call-out that we spoke about last time. We also had another one happen this past Sunday. It was a water main break that we had to repair. The water was off for approximately 45 minutes to 2 customers. Got that repaired and fixed. Mostly been working on raising valves, valve boxes, getting them out of these alleyways so we have they're accessible to us. Because during that main break, there was about 1.5 to 2 feet of mulch. They were covering our valves. Took us a little bit to get to it. We actually got the backhoe out there and located them. So it took a little longer to locate these valves. So what we're doing is just raising them up, getting them out of the dirt, whatever debris in the way. We're still continuing to replace meters, replacement meter program. As for the utility truck that we've spoke about many times, we are getting the paperwork all together, and hopefully it'll be on the next agenda. So that'll be a good thing. And as for the emergency generator at Well 8, the electrical engineer, he's already done all the specs on it, and we're going to be meeting with him tomorrow, myself, the general manager, the electrical engineer, and our engineer, district engineer. We're all going to meet together and go over what he specced out so we get a good understanding. Any questions?
Of course.
Go ahead, Mary.
Okay, so Tony, you've talked to us about exercising the fire extinguisher, the fire hydrants, right?
So the valves, right?
The valves, right?
Yes.
You know, you blow them out and make sure they're working and they got the pressure going and all that good stuff. And you check those on a regular basis. So what's the weirdest thing you've ever found in one of those?
2x4.
Okay. So after the fire was out, you did hear what they found in the fire. After the fire was out, both the hoses were running full blast, right? And they were mopping up and pulling dust stuff out of the fire structure, right? And one of the hoses went down. And when they went over to unplug it, they pulled out a 2x4 with nails in it about that long. Now, it had to have been way down the line because it had just put out a fire, that hydrant. And that 2x4 had worked its way up to the top. Unfortunately, it was after the fire was out. So think about that. And you have found 2x4s in those things then, huh?
I actually found it after the fire when they couldn't shut down the 4-inch pumper. It was a piece of a 2x4. It was about 4 inches long.
Yeah.
It was stuck in the 4-inch pumper, and they couldn't shut the hydrant off. So we had to go out there, shut off the valve to the hydrant, remove the line, and then actually clear the obstruction.
And if you put this in the records, in the record, in the minutes, I asked Miss Lucy to run that discussion tonight. I checked. We legally do not have a conflict, obviously, because I sit on that board at the direction of our bylaws. To facilitate the discussion, I did ask Miss Lucy, and she graciously agreed to do that. The other thing that I think is more important, and it will be upcoming, is we received a report. I don't want to call it a report. Manager, Rick Sweet, who I advised at the last meeting, is retiring from Santa Maria to work on recycled water projects for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, advised us that the grandiose scheme at this point is to build a second plant to treat to somewhere probably near in the Arroyo Grande area near the trunk line to treat water and then or treat sewage and to a point where it can be ponded and recharge the basin. So initial sort of idea is that we can do at least 1 million gallons a day. The byproduct of that, of course, is brine, which would then come to the current existing plant and be discharged through the outfall. That's the plan at this point. But recycled water projects are moving forward. There's about $1.6 billion in anticipated state funding. We are trying to have any project ready by the time that funding becomes available so that the impact to the ratepayers would be minimized and that the impact to the basin as a positive impact would be maximized also. So stay tuned. More of that to come later. And hopefully this is a big benefit to our local community. Mary?
I had a busy week. I attended the special meeting we had regarding the water and our water portfolio. I was able to attend the Board of Supervisors, not yesterday, but the week before, which I'll let the General Manager speak on behalf of. I attended the Zone 1-1A meeting regarding some of the debris that is down in the Arroyo Grande Creek due to transient populations and seeing quite possibly if maybe that might be a good place for that project is at the Zone 1-1A committee level, since you have the property owners, you have the county, and all the interested parties at that body. So I'm going to talk to Jen about possibly taking on that responsibility. I attended the Arroyo Grande City Council meeting last night because they have a really great social marketing program that was up on their agenda. It was actually very, very good to inform residents about the drought and what they can do, but it didn't talk anything about how to diversify their water portfolio, how to bring new water sources online, what's available online. So it was mainly directed towards the public, what the public can do, and not so much about what policymakers could do. So I did see a line item in there that had the name Oceano on it, which was a little surprising to me, I think overall the social marketing program was really strong, and I wish there was something exciting new besides, you know, showering with a bucket in your shower. But the way they were going to reach out to a lot of people, I thought was interesting. So, and then I did nothing.
Oh, great. Director White?
Yeah, I'm going to discuss at Oceano Advisory Council on Monday. We had the young men who were in charge of the Urus sponsoring the Huck Fest, which is on in October 17th and 18th at the Oceano Dunes. Now, it was known as the Pismo Huck Fest. They have changed it to just the Huck Fest. And I have in my hand a rather large initial study negative declaration on an EIR for the Huck Fest. This declaration says there will be no hazards and no challenges from hosting the Huck Fest. It will not have the 20,000 million people that had last year because the tickets are being sold in advance. The people have to drive onto the beach before they can actually register. They're going to have, they're restricted, according to the EIR, Environmental Impact Report, to 1,100 spectators. 11,000 spectators, yes, and including 700 campers. So it's basically a show for people, not an event that everybody can participate in, which I had thought it was. And they also will have rock bands out there, shows out there. A big base camp with bonfires, and it's quite a show. The challenges that they had last year, with not much control over the beach, you just go on the beach and you could go to the event, they hope to have solved by the admission charges. And they also have 400 standby parking spots at Grover at the parking lot there. And those people, if they want to get down to the... And the Huck Fest itself is down, clear down at Competition Hill. I don't know how far that is down the beach. 5 miles down the beach, so that's about right. So they hope to... You have to have a ticket in advance. You go to the kiosks. You show that ticket. They flag you through. Then you go down to the two-mile post where you register. So all the registration will be done down on the beach, so they hope that it won't jam Pier and Grand, but there is no guarantee because of the people that might just come to see it, who know what's going on, who don't have a ticket, who want to come anyway, and they come into Pier and the beach is full, they're not going to be able to turn around very good and get back. So, but they're working very hard to make it as safe and good as they can. You know, I think their motives are in the right place. I just don't think maybe the closing the beach is the right way to go, because I know I'm concerned about the people that'll just be coming in for the weekend. It's Clam Festival weekend as well, and there might be people coming over for both the Clam Festival. This event is being held on a Friday and Saturday, so Friday will have the influx of people coming in, and then they'll have the competition, and then Saturday afternoon they'll have awards and stuff. So my question was whether the traditional Pismo Beach Clam Festival Saturday morning parade would conflict with this, with people coming up and down the Highway 1 for the Huck Fest, and we'll hope that that doesn't happen. And are there any questions?
Oh, I was just going to add, it's my understanding, too, that the concessionaires, the other ATV rental areas, they will be open for business, and you'll have, they'll have their own road, their own pathway over to the dunes. That was my understanding.
No. The concessionaires who have mobile ATVs on trailers and stuff will be able to take those down there and rent to the Huckfest participants. There won't be anybody else allowed on those dunes but the Huckfest people.
Oh. I was that's good to know because that's not what I was told.
Huh? Yeah. What were you told?
That the concessionaires would go on as business as usual.
Yeah. So how are they going to do
out.
That then? If they're not going to allow, no, if they're not going to allow anybody on the dunes unless you are competing in this festival, how are the vendors going to rent to?
There won't be anything. No, there won't be any rentals because people bring their own stuff that are going to be there.
So it's going to wreck the economy, basically.
Most likely, but I'm going to be over there in their office tomorrow.
So, because it's a contradiction of what they're saying.
Exactly.
You know, and also, too, is the two rock bands are happening Friday night. So they got one Metallica band coming in Friday and then one Saturday night.
No, they'll be coming in on Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah, so you're not going to be able to get down to the beach from Monday. Just mark that week out of your calendar.
Yeah.
But I really have an issue with this. I'm sorry. We paid, as taxpayers, we paid for that beach. I have a seasonal pass. Mm-hmm. I go down there every morning. You know, I pick up shells. My grandkids go down there and say, well, you don't get to use your paid beach this week because these guys have bought it. It's just an injustice, I think. Plus, I think the EIR report is not factual.
Lori, if you would let us know what happens with your discussions with them, because it
will.
Seems
yeah.
they're putting everybody out of business that are vendors, you know, yourself
included.
That's what
included, it sounds like,
the
doesn't
weekend
it?
Is.
Oh, well, we'll figure it out.
And did the county ever give anybody an answer on, well, first of all, they won't take responsibility for their roads, and then they won't take responsibility for all these people flooding in and parking everywhere. Do they actually think that somebody's going to walk 3 miles in the sand from Grand Avenue down to this festival? I don't think so.
No,
what they're going to do is they're going to park at south end of the airport, they're going to jump up on that levee, and they're going to shoot down that levee. We know it. We've seen it before.
Otherwise, you'll be out of beer by the time you get there. So.
Even up in this area, too. Even up in this area, too.
Pardon me?
Up in the regular town area as well, because there are going to be a lot of people looking for parking.
Maybe the CHP can come by and tow people that are blocking driveways.
Oh, no. They threatened to give people tickets that were putting orange cones out in front of their homes. They said it was illegal to do that.
Well,
you
and
can
they
block
can park there for 72 hours, and that's all they need.
Yeah. Hmm. So, yeah, it's been a big issue going on down in the area here. So, anyway, we got a lot of other things to discuss.
Well, let's move on to the consent agenda. We'll take public comment on the consent agenda. There is a review and approval of minutes and cash disbursements with an amended cash disbursements. Good evening, Ms. Tacker.
Hi, I'm Julie Tacker, and just briefly on your cash disbursements, I wanted to point out the general manager's pay for his 80 hours is $7,538, and the next highest employee worked 96 hours, and he, no, that's incorrect. The next highest paid person made $2,345 in the same pay period. Just wanted to point that out. Also wanted to let you know that by some happenstance, I have been in communication with Mr. Lonnie Curtis. Lucky me. But what he, we talked about the generator and the specs for the generator, and he said that he did some work on that and that he did $115,000 worth of work on that. And if he did that work as general manager, that's your property, and where is it? Because you paid him a salary to generate whatever documents. So go get it. With regard to the Huckfest comments, I have to say that's not an EIR. That is what you want. You want an EIR. And when you comment on the CEQA document, you should be asking for an EIR because the impacts that they are analyzing are only on the dunes. They're not talking about the impacts that go into your neighborhoods and down your streets. And I hear all the time.
President Guerrero, you may want to advise
Ms. Tacker
that this is not on the consent agenda. You asked for public comment on the consent agenda.
This is the consent agenda.
Right.
The other item number 10, we take public comment if you want to comment on the consent agenda.
I'm talking on the reports. The reports.
This item was for items listed on the consent calendar.
Okay, so when can I talk to the reports?
At item number 10, the business items.
Okay, then I'll just wait right here because I'm next.
Thanks. Well, actually, we haven't heard.
That's how it works.
We haven't heard the. We haven't had done the consent agenda yet. Okay. Thank you. Is there any other public comment on the consent agenda?
It's stupid, huh, Mary?
All right. Is there a motion or any discussion on the consent agenda?
I move that we accept the consent agenda.
And that would be with the amended cash disbursements?
Correct.
All right. Is there a second?
I'll second.
All right. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. And that carries by a vote of 5-0. Thank you. We'll take public comment on item number 10. Ms. Tucker, I believe you have 2 minutes left.
Okay.
Marie?
What?
Because you took 1 minute initially, and then you just did public comment. So you have 2 minutes left.
Initially. Okay. Fine. I guess.
No.
And what am
no.
I allowed to speak to at this point?
This one is on special presentations, reports, board of directors, and outside committees, and any business items.
Can I ask for clarification?
Yeah.
Are we going to review and approve the minutes?
You just did.
We just did in the consent agenda.
Oh, that's right. It's folded in. I'm sorry.
Yes.
So let's fold that into that line item.
Okay.
Sorry.
So.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Hang on 1 second. We've got a distraction.
It's not a distraction. That's the business.
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about them.
They're not distraction. It's not a distraction.
Right. Do we have other requests for public comment, Marie? Are those?
The items that she's requested to speak on should have come at for items not on the agenda, and she wasn't here for
Ms.
that.
Oh, Ms. Naylor? Okay. So, you know, why don't we, in the interest of fairness, after intense board deliberation, give Ms. Tacker a full 3 minutes here?
3 minutes?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. And what am I getting to speak to?
Okay, this is what's listed on the agenda: special presentations, reports, board of directors, and outside committees,
okay.
And any business items.
Okay, and then I need a little more clarification on the hearing item. Will I get to speak
yes.
to the hearing item?
Yes, that's correct.
As a separate
Good.
3 minutes?
Yes.
Thank you. That's what I thought. Okay, so...
Marie?
I could, for the RAC, did she present that to your board, and when did you see those comments? And what do you have to say about those comments? I have really nothing to say about the FOG program. The strategic plan for the Northern Cities Management Area. I'd like an explanation from Mr. Ogren. What happened at the board regarding the Zone 3, he references it in his staff report. You had a decision there, but you still had the cities dissenting, and the cities were upset, and I'd like to know, you know, what exactly is it that they were upset about that we didn't come to a consensus? Because I thought that's what he was trying to bring you all to, and the emails from the other contributors seemed to be on board with what was added on there. And then in that Northern Cities Management Strategic Plan, I don't see the cost breakdown that I've seen in other people's staff reports and how that affects Oceano should you participate. And I have some concerns about the costs. Clearly, they are exorbitant. And I don't know how you're going to participate in this overall 5-year strategic plan if you don't have the money to participate. And then I do have a concern from what Ms. Blackburn heard a month or so ago about decisions made by consensus at NCMA, and that you may be forced to pay whether or not you have the ability to pay. And if that's inaccurate, I'd love to hear that, but we don't have the consultant who told her that here to pitch that to you. So I'll be back for the budget item later on. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Is there any other public comment this evening, Marie?
Yes,
sir. All right. Yes, come on up, Giselle. Good
Hi.
Evening, Ms. Naylor.
I haven't had a chance to read your hefty, informative agenda here. There's only one of them in the back, and I took it out of the binder to look over it.
Can you speak into the
microphone, please? Sorry.
Thank you so much. So you have a hefty item agenda that talks about plans for Oceana Water, the Integrated Regional Water Management Plan, and the Northern Cities Water Plan. So I'm wondering, are these online? Okay. I wanted to say that the water contracts that I've been asking for on and off since 2001, I started making written requests and submitting them, getting them stamped and acknowledged that they were being received in 2010. And Mr. Ogren, because I renewed that request, he asked me where those public records requests were. So there's a problem in that Oceano has no procedure, no written, consistent procedure by which to protect its public records and its prior contracts. And just as an example, even talking about the garbage contract, which is simple compared to the, you know, when you get into water contracts, if a government entity is a party to that contract, when finalized, shall be made public. But just to talk about the garbage contract, which is pretty finite, I asked for copies of the original contract and the amendments so that I could see how the changes, how the terms and conditions changed each time you folks renewed the contract. I only got one contract, and one term was changed. I don't believe that you people changed it. I just don't believe it, because that particular term stated that if the district should identify an irregularity, like an accounting irregularity, they had the right to inspect the garbage contractor's records at no additional cost. That was expressly put into the contract, and that the garbage company would do that. The term has changed, and there's no evidence. Where did this change? Is this what you guys signed off on? Now it's changed to where if you find an irregularity and you want to audit their books, you have to pay them for them to get their bookkeeping in order. Who says crime doesn't pay? You know? So I can't stress enough, if you change a term, I'm no expert, but Matthew, I'm hoping that you will think this is reasonable. If the legislature changes a law, they strike out what they're changing, so you know what they're striking out and what they're adding in. And you're getting into major contracts for water.
Thank you, Ms. Naylor. Thank you so much. Is there any other public comment this evening? All right, we'll close public comment at this meeting. Move on to item 10A, which is the submittal of a resolution approving the 2014 San Luis Obispo County Integrated Regional Water Management.
Regional Water Management Plan for the San Luis Obispo County region. And like Pavel mentioned, I work for County Public Works Department. So today I'll keep it really brief and then really leave it open to questions you might have before you take action today. I'll briefly cover the program background on what began this whole process of water management. And then I'll speak about our local process to actually update the plan itself. And then spend a brief minute or two just talking about the future of IRWM in our region. And then I'll let you get to your action. So this whole process began back in 2002 when the state started to shift the paradigm on how water resources should be managed throughout the state. And California voters enacted propositions and a water bond that would begin this new integrated regional water management planning effort. Since then, 49 regions have been formed throughout the state. Our region just happens to line up with the county boundaries, so it involves all of the agencies and jurisdictions we're used to working with. And it's really intended to be a way of thinking differently about water resources management and getting us to think outside of our normal jurisdictional boundaries and thinking more on a watershed, groundwater basin, or regional level. And it's important to note that this is a planning effort, and it's not regulatory, and it's really just to make agencies within our region and stakeholders eligible for grant funding and also to improve our government structure so that we start thinking about water as more of a shared resource. And then the last important thing to note here is that this is a living document. So you can see the plan over here. It's about 800 pages thick. It's intended not to just sit and get dusty on a shelf, but to be constantly renewed and looked at by all the agencies in our area. So stepping into our local plan, we really started this process back in 2005 when the region wrote the first IRWM plan. And then that was updated in 2007 to include up-to-date project lists and to make the region eligible for grant funding, which it was later awarded. And since then, 7 years later, we've had a number of conditions change, changes within our water, groundwater basins and our watersheds. We've also been awarded planning studies and have learned more about the region through those efforts. And then on a countywide level, we've also had the Master Water Report finalized, which helped to provide better information on water balances throughout the county. And lastly, we've been awarded grant fundings, and that went towards the Zone 11A Waterway Management Program, as well as the Los Osos Wastewater Project and the Pomo Supplemental Water Project. So there's been a lot of benefit brought into the communities through this program. And then one of the requirements of getting that grant funding was that our region update the plan so that we can continue to be eligible for future grant funding. So this whole process of the updating the plan really started with the important step of defining a governance structure. The state put out new requirements that really looked to our local region to better inform the public and really bring the public into the process versus having it be more agency-led. And so the new governance structure looked at a bottom-up approach. And so though I'm here via the county, my role has been more of facilitation of this plan update, but it's really been through the input and the recommendations of all the different agencies and individual stakeholders that created this plan. So you can see here, it's just a flow of individual agencies and stakeholders bringing in information, coming to workshops, and participating, and then it moves up to what we call the Regional Water Management Group, that's the decision-making body of this planning effort. And so your agency is one of 23 participating on that board. And then let's see, Director Angelo was actually one of the representatives who often came and helped to make decisions at those meetings. And then on the side, we had an advisory group through the Flood Controls Water Resource Advisory Committee. And Director Lucy was involved on the subcommittee there, as Ms. Tacker spoke to earlier, and she was able to help provide public comment throughout that process. And then the final steps are moving it through the Flood Control District's Board of Supervisors for final action, and then working, the Flood Control District works with the state on any of those specific coordination efforts. So with that big step in place, agencies and nonprofit organizations were able to start signing on to this effort and getting involved. So we have 23 agencies. It's made up of cities, CSDs, the Resource Conservation Districts, a mutual water company, and then several nonprofits. And so we've had a good breadth of people involved and types of agencies involved, so it brought a balanced perspective here. And then the second big step for defining the IRWM plan is to set the vision of the whole document. This document's really intended to bring our region together so that we think about these boardroom right here. And then all of the agencies help by giving us input on things like the water balance and different plan write-ups throughout the process. So we were able to go through public comment period and many different draft sections where we could bring in comments. And now we're at the stage where we're finalizing and approving the plan. And what that really means to adopt the plan is to adopt those foundational elements, the governance, the goals and objectives, and the project review process. Everything else is a living part of the document that can be changed over time without having to readopt necessarily. So that's the step we're at. And right when we were getting down to finalizing the plan at the beginning of this year, the state came in with a new requirement that we had to meet. So Director Angelo knows. So this was, the state came to us and said, here are 16 standards. And unlike in the past, we're going to evaluate your plan. So you need to submit it, we're going to evaluate it, and then we'll say whether or not you've met all the requirements. And if we do, we become eligible. And so we went through great pains to go through the whole plan and make sure that we thought it did, in fact, meet the state standard through the help of representatives from the CSD and other agencies. And I'm happy to inform you that on August 15th, DWR did approve our plan and said that we got 100%.
Excellent.
So that was good news. And then I just wanted to speak a little bit about how the plan relates to Oceano CSD specifically. So there's a lot of information in the plan. It's really an inventory of water resources data and water balance data and information about a lot of different things. And it, like I mentioned, it's based upon input that we received from all of the agencies. And what you can see here is in the governance and the discussion of disadvantaged communities, you'll find Oceano described as one of the participants. It talks about what are your roles and responsibilities over time in that venue of the RWMG. And then there's the region description, which gets into a little bit more about how Oceano CSD is a part of the region and how you're a part of the sub-regional and watershed efforts throughout the county. And then we've got more specific information as we get into things like the water balance, where it talks about Oceano as a part of a water planning area and your water demand over the next 20 years. And then we have other areas where it's also a little more specific to Oceano with the goals and objectives. There are sub-regional priorities that were written by all the partners down here in South County. And then you'll see actual projects that were submitted by OCSD into the plan itself and that are now housed in there as potential implementation projects for the region over time. And so, or I should say, potential implementations by your agency over time, but as a part of the IRWM plan, which is a really big benefit to have them in there. And so now you've got the plan before you and hopefully have a bit of an understanding of how it relates to your agency. I wanted to just let you know where it's come from before it got here to your board. The Regional Water Management Group did approve the plan on August 6th, and then the Water Resource Advisory Committee took action to support adoption by the Flood Control District and all of the agencies on the RWMG. And the Flood Control District then adopted the plan on August 12th, and since then we've had about 15 or 16 of the 23 agencies adopt, and I've got another couple of agencies adopting over the next couple days. So steps from here are just finalizing all of the agencies' adoptions and then submitting to the state by their deadline of September 9th. So it's very exciting. And so just before you take action, I do just want to give you a little bit of that foresight into what comes next. So integrated regional water management planning is meant to continue on. It's not changing anytime soon. And so we're going to be looking to the next 5 years. Now that we have this plan adopted, how do we start implementing this vision and these goals and objectives throughout the region? And we do that through the work of all the different agencies and through input of keeping that data fresh and current so that it can be a more informative plan as we move forward. And then we'll continue working with the state throughout the process really to ensure that we're staying consistent with them and maintaining eligibility if a water bond in fact is passed in the future or other opportunities come up. And it's really just meant to be a plan that adapts with our changes. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that takes our region forward. So today's action, I'll leave that to your board to discuss. This is a final step in that's related to the MOU that your agency executed 2 years ago, and it's part of what keeps you on the Regional Water Management Group itself and a part of that governing body. So with that, thank you so much for having me here today. I'm happy to answer any questions, and again, thank you to your staff and the directors for all of the work you've put in so far, and hopefully we can continue to keep everyone coordinating on this effort.
I think it's quite the
We're a little less than a month, and they approved it. We submitted it on July 18th.
What does their approval mean? Does that mean that they've confirmed that you meet all the state standards?
Yeah, they go through, and there's actually a rubric published online. What they have is a 30-day public comment period open now on the review they did, in case anyone wants to comment on that. But Basically, they went through all of the 16 state standards on IRWM planning, and especially those related to legislative requirements. And
that's important because then that means in future grant applications, our region is eligible. Future grant applications are still done on a competitive basis, so it doesn't mean that we're guaranteed any money. A couple of important points from the very beginning of the IRWM, and I saw it was on Carolyn's, it's not a regulatory document, and it's not even a compulsory document. So those issues or ideas that we've incorporated into the plan, you know, there's not a requirement to implement. There's no penalties if we don't move forward. But what is important on the next round in terms of the performance review, which is a new component of this plan, is that there will be a process for evaluating what is it that all the agencies put into the plan in terms of what they thought we were going to accomplish and how are we doing. And I think that's an important step to move forward in IRWM planning, because in an 800-page document or an 800-pound document, there's concepts in there and there's projects in there. So things that are more definitive as projects, you would expect movement forward on them. But there's other things that are more concepts. And as time goes by, like any concept, some of them, you know, regionally we're going to think, oh, those are continue to be good ideas. They'll move into a project and move forward on them. Other concepts over time will be deemed to be, you know, less valuable and would likely drop. But because it is a big document and there's a lot of technical work in there, for policymakers, such as your board, that performance review process really is an important one, because it's the focus in on what is it that we were hoping to accomplish versus what did we actually accomplish. I made some photocopies of some excerpts that I'm going to hand out, not that we're going to spend a lot of time on them, but within it, in our water planning area, and Carolyn had mentioned water budgets and everything, so in our water planning area, the document has, and there's some handouts up front, it has all of our different water budgets, Oceano's water budget. As an example, for state water, although we contract for 750 acre feet of state water, we only get credit for two-thirds of that in our water budget, because that's relatively close to the average reliability of state water. And so it has our water budget, Arroyo Grande's water budget, Napomo CSD's water budget, all of those different water budgets associated with it. And so it's a good resource document to be able to look at one place, to be able to look at our water planning area, or anybody who's interested in water in the county of San Luis Obispo overall can go to this document and they can find out the basics associated with what's going on in the Paso Basin. The other handout that I have is a quick excerpt, again, is some of the goals and sub-regional priorities. And so the three sub-regions, North Coast, North County, and South County, each have different types of priorities. And we'll speak to it a little bit more in one of our subsequent agenda items. But the one that I'm sort of struggling to point out real quickly here is that there is a sub-regional priority in the South County for enhancing our use of surface water storage. And I'm not picking exactly which page it is, but the point being is that that was part of the board's actions, Board of Supervisors' actions last week, to reopen the Lopez contracts to talk about storage rights.
That's page E37 in the right bottom category there. It says increased groundwatering monitoring focused on storage.
Okay, and that one's specific to groundwater monitoring, and part of the board's action on Tuesday also was to open up the possibility of providing funding for both MCMA as well as NMMA. And there's another strategy associated also specifically with surface water storage. And so what we're doing right now in those efforts are consistent with the IRWM plan, and sort of pointing that out, because as we go through the process of contract negotiations, there's going to have to be a CEQA document associated with it, and being able to point back to consistency with the IRWM planning efforts is important. The last concept is that this document is only as good as what we make it to be, because it is a collaborative bottom-up approach.
We can't pull down our entire allocations from all our sources. That storage would be an optimal situation for Oceano, and so, but it's a concept still, so we made sure that concept was in there. So when we go to apply for funding, we have documentation that we're not applying for funding on a whim, that we've thought about it, it's in this planning document, and we continue, as they become developed, we continue to submit to it so the funders can see that we've put some thought into this and are trying to plan for
it. And that's a really good point, because the IRWM program itself and Prop 84 is administered through the Department of Water Resources. But what we're seeing in water granting, whether it comes out of the Department of Water Resources or the State Water Board or whatever form of, if you don't have an adopted IRWM plan, your likelihood of getting any water resource-related funding drops significantly. So it's a good tool for water resource planning. It's good in order to pursue IRWM funding pools, but it's also increasingly a requirement of other funding pools as well, and that's because this whole program is a component of the California Water Plan.
So I move that we accept the IRW plan for 2013 and the next 5 years.
Actually, it's 2014.
It's the adoption of the resolution, if I might be so bold, or even adoption of staff recommendations.
Get all official on me.
Here.
Yeah. Staff recommendations would work.
Yeah.
Staff recommendations to adopt resolution number that doesn't have a number on it.
It'll be filled in once we know what it is.
Okay. Resolution accepting the IRWM plan.
Second.
All right. Marie, if we can get a roll call vote, please.
And you can clean it up, Jeff.
We have a motion by Ms. Lucy, second by Ms. Angelo.
Vice President Lucy?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
President Guerrero?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
It carries by a vote and a motion and vote of 5-0. Thank you very much, and I can thank staff and the county.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Carolyn, we weren't the first, but how many have adopted it? Good.
We're right around 15, in on the two-thirds mark.
Well, hey, we're far from last.
There you go.
Hey, that's a big thing to us.
As a side note, some of the information that was attached to the staff report, especially the San Luis Valley, the MOU, that's better than NyQuil. I tried to read this Monday night. I woke up 3 hours later with papers all over the place. So
I thought it was interesting.
Did you?
Yeah.
Magnifying glass.
I had to start again last night because I couldn't do it on Monday. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Carolyn.
Thank you.
Move on to item 10B, and I'd asked Ms. Lucy to lead the discussion on that. This is the two-year agreement with the South SLO CSD about the FOG program.
This is basically a straightforward FOG program, fats, oils, and greases. We have about 16 to 18 restaurants and other food service establishments that deal with fats, oils, and greases. We're the ones that go up and clean out the messes when these products are not handled properly. So this is a pretty straightforward recommendation that the field staff take over overseeing the compliance with the FOG program for the sanitation district. Any staff recommendations or comments?
Just a few comments. So in review of the document, which was originally developed through the South, through the sanitation district, and working with our legal counsel, Mr. Minnery, the document is a little bit different than what was on the sanitation district's agenda last week or so. I think last Wednesday. And the item that's been deleted is that there was an item in there that, in addition to doing FOG, it also had a provision that the sanitation district would do our internal audits of our SSMP, which is our sanitary sewer management plan. And so those functions have been deleted from the contract, because as internal audit requirements, it's something that we, you know, really need to be able to do internally. The FOG component, the FOG program, is just one component of our overall SSMP. As an example, if we have overflows from a lift station or something, then we have reporting responsibilities to the Regional Water Board. Our part of our jetting program itself is part of our SSMP program. So we have requirements above and beyond what the FOG program is, and because they're internal audit requirements and because the Sanitation District is an external agency, I wanted those things deleted because it's really what we need to do, you know, with Tony and the operators in order to make sure we're doing everything that the state's general permit requires private industry to get our work done. And, of course, we then also included the cost comparison in order to show that, you know, either which way, it's hardly a cost differential by using the Sanitation District to help with the FOG program. Of course, it helps to cover a little bit of their cost, not a significant portion, obviously. And we have the same customer base, so working with the Sanitation District certainly is beneficial. Examples where an example that, you know, I would not look to another governmental agency, but I would typically look to a private firm, is our backup on on-call. Tony had mentioned that we had the line break the other day, and he had to pull FRM in order to help resolve the line break. In on-call situations, other governmental agencies aren't going to be nearly as responsive as private industry, simply because the staff of the other agencies are really on call for their own emergencies and not other agencies. So it does become a little bit of a policy issue, though, is for your board. Are you okay with working with the Sanitation District versus working with private outfits? But again, it's not something that would strictly require us to go out with an RFP because it is an arrangement with another governmental institution. And those conclude my comments.
I think in this case, because there's such a nexus between the FATs here and the FATs across the creek there, that I think it makes some sense. And I would always prefer private business when it's feasible, but this seems like it's just so closely related that we should keep it in our...
That's right. They can see things that are happening and anticipate, you know, what they are going to see at the treatment plant.
I think there's also a sense of accountability because the Sand District is part of the district. We do have a vested interest of 33 1/3 in the Sanitation District, so kind of makes sense. But also to the field crew, they're excellent on compliance and making sure that these programs are working and in place because they have to clean the messes up. So I'm fine with the collaboration.
Well, John Clements, who is the plant superintendent at the sewer plant, is also a statewide trainer for FOG programs, and so having him have landed in our backyard, literally, it just to me it seems like a very obvious, natural choice.
And there's definitely a difference on how that plant's been ran since he's been there too.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. It's been
So I'd entertain a motion.
I second.
Discussion.
Oh wait.
No, I didn't make it. I said I'd entertain it.
Ms. Blackburn.
I just had a question. On part of the contract, it says the notice of violation fees that OCSD will collect those. And I was just wondering if that was a resolution that was already in place or if we would have to do it after this.
I don't know the answer to that question. Okay. It could be that our rules and regulations already cover these type of violations, and we would already have the ability to both issue notice of violations as well as take enforcement action for collection. But I don't know that to be true. And so it may be that subsequent actions are going to be required for your board in order to be able to enforce, you know, make sure that this detail is addressed. To me, that's part of my evaluation of the overall SSMP itself and bringing forward with your board, because if there's any gaps in our current rules and regulations, we would need to address them at that point in time. In terms of the relationship between OCSD and the Sanitation District, that's all on our back, because what the agreement provides for is that if we collect any NOV fees, then that just is part of offsets the revenues that, you know, the money we have to otherwise pay them. If we don't, well, we still have to pay them. So it's our incentive to make sure to get that correct so that we can pursue those fees.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, do I hear a motion?
We already did it, didn't we?
No. She said she'd entertain a motion.
I'd entertain a motion.
Oh.
Karen, you want to make a motion?
Yeah, as soon as I find the...
Here.
Phone book. Oh. I make a motion. Only this is...
Here.
Try this one.
I make a motion that we approve a two-year agreement with the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District for inspection and reporting control program on the fats, oils, and grease fog control program for food services establishments in the
longer representing Pismo Beach or Grover Beach, and there might be a near-term change in Arroyo Grande as well. And so the status of legal counsel has changed already. WSC Consultants has been used by all four agencies in sort of an extension of staff and on some of the, what I'm just going to characterize as, well, these strategic planning areas and on some of the miscellaneous studies. And all four of the agencies going to agree on the future of WSC, and it may be that we don't all agree, just like we're not all using the same legal counsel right now either. The third party to the NCMA efforts is FUGRO, and FUGRO has been preparing the annual report for NCMA. And that's the thing that is most directly a stipulation of the courts, that we have to prepare an annual report. But some of these other items are not direct responsibilities, but are more or less discretionary. And of course, when it comes to groundwater and groundwater adjudications, what might be discretionary one year becomes mandatory next year if we all run back into the courts and something needs to be worked on. Because the point of an adjudication is that that's the process through which the groundwater basin is managed. It's not a type of a litigation that gets settled and it's done forever and you've wrapped up your affairs and, you know, the parties can shake hands or not shake hands and move on, but it's really how we go about managing the groundwater basin. So my thought in having this is to do some, you know, run through some of my thoughts in reviewing the NCMA strategic plan, hear from your board, and then that will give me a better ability to have continued dialogue with the other agencies, and then come back and give your board updates or action items, and be better prepared, therefore, when I do come back with specific action items. So what I want to do is really turn your attention to some of the tables and sort of run through, or one table in particular, where I see the Oceano having more of a role in it versus less of a role or even potentially no role in it, and also speak to that in context with the Board of Supervisors' actions last week, because their actions do have a bearing on some of these. So I'm moving forward to page 11, and that's what's called Table 3, or the Implementation Plan. And wait for a second to make sure everybody's there, but underneath there, the key strategy is enhance the management of NCMA groundwater. And A and B are two items. One is groundwater modeling, and the other one is establishing more monitoring wells. Well, the good news from the County Board of Supervisors' actions last week is that one of the supplemental recommendations that we worked on with the cities was to see if we can get some sort of a funding commitment from the county to help pay for both the groundwater model as well as monitoring wells. And the Board of Supervisors, in fact, did adopt that motion. It's not a strict funding commitment, but it was a commitment to work with us on funding, which usually means that if you can get your foot in that door a little bit, you can probably get a buck before you leave. And, you know, the question in the continued dialogue will be to what level the county might participate in the helping of the funding of these work efforts. Generally speaking, I like monitoring wells more than I like groundwater modeling. And the reason why I like monitoring wells is that provides you with what we call empirical evidence. It gives you real data to which you're working with. Point being is that in the world of science, you're always going through a process of hypothesis and testing your hypotheses and everything else like that. And so if we develop monitoring wells, and there's already a lot of them, but there's gaps in the existing monitoring, and how do we fill in those gaps in order to be able to tell whether or not we truly are having seawater intrusion, as opposed to a model that says, well, I'm going to predict that you're going to have seawater intrusion. I tend to be the type of in-person who wants to look at real data, to be able to track real data based on hypotheses and everything. There is benefits about having groundwater models. Estimating how much groundwater we actually have in storage is a good one. The lack of a model means that right now we can't estimate what percentage reduction we should have in groundwater pumping. So one of the recent NCMA meetings I went to, I asked that question. I said, do we know how much water is in storage? The answer is we don't know. have we made a determination on what percent we should cut back on our groundwater pumping? And the answer is there's not, there's not a percentage right now. In contrast, for the low reservoir response plan that's being developed for Lopez, there's specific percentage reductions in deliveries that are being incorporated into that plan. But of course, a surface water reservoir, you can see it, you can measure how much water is in it, you know what your storage is, and in a groundwater basin lacking a model, you don't have that information. So it also lists Pismo Beach because, of course, Pismo has its own separate wastewater. With respect to groundwater storage and the management agreement under D&E, I don't know. I need to gain better understanding from the staff in the NCMATG as to where do they think they're going with those particular items. Obviously, with Oceano and our water portfolio being very good, then it begs why would we participate in some of those other efforts. So those two I had questions on. Turning to the next page, underneath 2A, I do see some potential benefits in inner ties, and that's primarily because Grover has a much higher pressure than we do. Where we have our connection, they're running at about 85 PSI, and we're in mid-50 PSIs. We know that we've got some pressure problems. That's why we're looking at the generator. But because of that differential in pressure, there's always a potential benefit that we can enhance our pressures, especially in emergency situations, by letting water flow between Grover and OCSD. So not from a water supply standpoint, because Grover would obviously be more interested in water supply from us, but they do have better pressures than us in some of the system, and so we might benefit from an intertie. Interagency mutual aid agreements, actually have that as a subsequent agenda item. Communications coordinated on the conservation program, potentially beneficial, and I think Vice President Lucy had mentioned that AG put in a presentation and had an estimate of what our share. I haven't seen it yet, but if they do an extended education on water conservation, they'll be asking us to see if we're willing to participate, usually less expensive than us doing that education on our own. Again, then moving through on development supplemental water supplies, I don't see us participating in some of those efforts financially because our water supplies are good. Improve water management governance. Yes, improving the interagency coordination, ag outreach. Tomorrow we have a meeting with the NCMA technical group and our agricultural stakeholders on the low reservoir response plan. And then on the item 4C, Northern Cities Governance and Legal Framework, I'm not sure exactly what they're speaking to there, so I have to have some more dialogue with them on that. Moving to page 13 on developing regional urban water management plan and water shortage contingency plans. I don't know why they choose to structure this as a strategy in the NCMA strategic plan, because on urban water management plans, there's already the requirement to have drought contingency planning in there. We're exempt from UWMP strict requirements because we have less than 3,000 connections. But Zone 3 has already developed an urban water management plan. And so I tend to believe that we should use that as the tool as opposed to developing a new urban water management plan for the five cities area. Granted, the agencies aren't the exact same because in Zone 3 you've got the Avila Valley area and Avila Beach CSD. They're not part of NCMA. But again, I think it's better accomplished through Zone 3, and so I don't see why there would be a big funding commitment on that. Water shortage contingency plans, again, that's already a component of urban water management plans under a different name, but through the State Water Board's emergency regulations that they adopted about a month ago, those with more than 3,000 connections are required to submit water shortage contingency plans or drought contingency plans. And so that's a requirement on the cities, not a requirement on us. So I wouldn't see us financially participating in that. Enhancing management of surface water. Again, on 6A, we get into the surface water storage issues, which I think is very important. And certainly the agreement with the Board of Supervisors to open the contract up to negotiating water storage rights is an important move. Items B and C, on Lopez pipeline capacity and the water treatment plant capacity and reliability, I'm not as so certain that we should be participating in costs associated with that, although we might be obligated to underneath our Zone 3 contracts. We don't have a capacity constraint in the Zone 3 conveyance system right now, but some of our neighboring communities do, and because we're all partners to that system, it might compel us. But specifically then on 6A and the discussion with the Board of Supervisors, and to the extent that there was some disagreement between the different agencies last Tuesday, and sort of how to characterize that. The cities were definitely coming from the angle that there, over the last couple years, there was a method of calculating surplus water that they wanted to stay with. And their basic argument was that it had been developed and they had relied upon it, and therefore their reliance, if it didn't continue to be used, would be an adverse impact on them. And our legal counsel could probably get into theories associated with reliance and adverse reliance and all those other. It would be true for you as well as also. So I think that where people were missing the boat, if you will, is that these surplus water determinations, and this is an analogy to finances, that surplus water, because it's a situation of it's calculated on an annual basis and you either use it or lose it if annual basis, that's more like a profit and loss statement. You know, what are we getting in? What are we using? Storage is a balance sheet issue. And so that's why using a surplus water calculation as a way of trying to establish storage is just doesn't make sense. That surplus water is fine, and if we wanted to make modifications during contract negotiations to how we have surplus, how much surplus water we should get, should it be different when the reservoir is more full? Should it be different when it's less, you know, at medium levels or low? And the discussion on the low reservoir response plan is once we get under 20,000 acre feet in storage, there will be no more surplus water from downstream releases. So that discussion about restricting surplus water when the reservoir is really low is already being incorporated into the LRRP. What should be done when about surplus water when the reservoir is full? What should be done about surplus water when the reservoir is at mid-level? But the point is, those surplus water calculations, however they're made in the future, that's independent from rights to storage. And I think that that's where a lot of the dissension came in on this particular issue, was just the lack of an understanding that those are two separate issues and they have to be treated separately. That store, a surplus water is one thing, it's more like a profit and loss statement, and storage is a completely separate concept, and it's more like a balance sheet. And what we have seen in water in California is as storage rights become more and more important, that's where the Royal Rock Commission turned to incorporating storage rights for Whale Rock Reservoir in the 1990s, I believe, and where State Water Project also started establishing storage rights as well. And then the bond measure that's apparently going to be on November's ballot for statewide voters, there's a huge chunk of that that's dedicated for storage. And so, you know, in a drought, it kind of brings out the importance of having water in storage. But again, I think it's that working through the other agencies and clarifying the difference between what is surplus about versus what storage is about. And in the subsequent discussions I have had with some of the other agencies since the board action last Tuesday, you know, I'm hopeful that we're starting to get closer to being on the same page. But with that, I just wanted to give your board a little bit of discussion about my review of the strategic plan, areas that I think will be important for OCSD to participate in, other areas where I don't necessarily see us participating in. And with that, I'd be, you know, glad to answer any questions.
Go ahead, Mary.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I insist.
Oh, okay.
Thanks, Pablo. When I attended the, well, first of all, I'll go back on the document. So I'll talk about that first. Okay. Do you want to talk about the document, or do you want to talk about
your
the
preference.
Difference in calculations?
At your pleasure.
No, go ahead.
Document, then.
Okay. Good choice. Okay, so Oceano has been working, with WSC for 3, maybe 4 years, possibly. Every year in the scope of work that's submitted within their bids, right, is the groundwater characterization. And for as long as we've had a contract, and I'm not going to state how long because I really don't know. I think it's been about like 3 years or 4 years. It always has the groundwater characterization, but it's never done. And so that makes me uncomfortable when I have contractors who don't fulfill their scopes of work. And so 1 year, last year, they had billed us for it, and then they decided, oh, well, we didn't do it, so then we got credit for it, which makes me even more suspicious. On Objective 4, page 7, enhance water supply reliability, pair the northern cities for prolonged drought conditions. I have not seen that occur. I have not seen a reduction in groundwater pumping from our sister entities, and so I'm not quite sure how they're going to fulfill that obligation by preparing for drought conditions when we're 3 years into a drought. What are they going to prepare us for when we hit 10 years? I mean, there's not going to be much to prepare us for at that point. You know, so that, once again, to me, is a contractual failure. And that might be strong language. Better protect against threats to groundwater sustainability. To date, the partners in read these documents and stuff like that, so I was able to kind of go through them pretty closely. Develop supplemental supply. Unless they're Mother Earth, I don't think that's going to happen. Supplemental water strategies, I have not seen come out of there. Implement a supplemental water supply. Develop 1,500 acre feet of permanent supplemental water supply within 10 years. 10 years, I don't think that we can sustain ourselves for 10 years in a drought. It sounds like a cut and paste proposal almost when you put things in there that just are not feasible. I don't see where they're going to pull 1,500 acre feet. Where are they going to pull it from? The sources, unless people start developing sources, there is no more traditional sources. There is the states dried up. It's just not there. So I don't know how they're going to fulfill their contractual agreement. Their budget jumped on page 11. Their budget for this year that we're working in now is $1.2 million for what they're proposing to do. Groundwater modeling, monitoring, develop a salt nutrient program, which is a duplication, storage, management. So this is where I get a little perplexed, is that it almost seems like a duplication to the efforts that Zone 3 puts together, and the majority of people who are sitting at this table are participating members of the Zone 3 advisory. Now on to the fun part, politics. One of the policymakers last Tuesday asked why the change in formula at this late date. And I thought it was, at first I didn't quite understand why this person was even asking this in the middle of a drought. You know, we're 3 years into this drought. Of course we're going to have to change things and how things are calculated. But it was really very clear when I figured out how much the service districts contribute to the amount of surplus. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think that we actually provide almost close to 90% of surplus water. And so by keeping the formula the same as it was in the past, it created a pool of surplus at our expense. And Ben Fine was ever so gracious to get up at the mic and say, we benefit from the surplus water. And so basically it was only the cities who would benefit, not the special service districts, not the districts, not the normal. It would be creating a pool of water that the cities could pull down on. So once again, it was us giving to the larger cities, and that's how the motion came across, and that's how I heard it, and I watched that tape 3 times. So I think that the Board of Supervisors finally got around to doing the right thing, but it still made me extremely nervous.
end, I'd be glad to reply, provide some dialogue on this. You know, certainly in droughts and complications of water, everybody gets nervous. So with respect and sort of working backwards through your comments, it is true that over the last 5 years, surplus water has been generated by the unincorporated areas through County Service Area 12, through OCSD, and because of downstream releases. The preponderance of the surplus water comes from savings in downstream releases, but all of the unincorporated areas have contributed to the surplus water in the last 5 years, and the surplus water has been utilized by the incorporated areas. Now, without any changes, we in Oceano can, without any changes in the Lopez contracts or anything in our external environment outside of the, your board's chambers right now, you still have the ability to affect a change in the future. And that is simply to use more of your Lopez water. And because it's a gravity-fed system, we don't have variable costs associated with Lopez. And in the future, again, if contract negotiations just didn't happen, and even if the Board of Supervisors had chosen to act differently last Tuesday, your board and Oceano can still choose to change its priorities in the utilization of water so that we don't give up our Lopez water to other agencies. Now, to better manage the supply is to have storage rights, so then we can make decisions associated with how much water do we want to have stored in San Luis Reservoir in the State Water Project, how much water do we want to store locally behind Lopez Reservoir. So there's no doubt recycled water can meet the needs of the five cities area, and there would be enough left over to help with the NMA area, and that gets into the strategies then of how do you develop, scope, propose a project, and then get your neighbors up the hill to make sure that they're helping pay for their fair share of the contributions.
And all I can say to that is start coming on the first and third Wednesdays to
yes.
Roy Grandy City Hall and talking about it. So.
Enhanced management of surface water is simply the storage rights.
Right. But does that also include capturing runoff?
Yes. And thank you. There is the ability to do more storm groundwater recharge with storm water. Before that can happen, phase one of the waterway management plan for the levees has to be done first. After phase one is done, then being able to use the modified levees to control flows and do groundwater recharge is definitely in the offing. And the question there is what program we work with ag, because of course agriculture has the land on which you could actually do recharge projects, but when you're doing recharge, you're taking agriculture out of production, so there's, you know, trade-offs, but it's certainly more viable here than it is in a lot of other places. With respect to groundwater pumping and Oceano and the others have reduced their groundwater pumping, there's no doubt about it. We've actually in some respects increased ours because of the reduction in the use of state water, but what I can do there is, and consistent with that water budget report that was in the IRWM, we can grab those numbers and we can report them to your board as we're getting those that information in from NCMA. So it might not be a monthly report to your board on updated information. Maybe I can get it on a monthly basis, but certainly at least on a quarterly basis when we're doing financial reviews on a quarterly basis, we can provide updates on how much water is everybody taking from Lopez or state water or groundwater pumping so that we can see what our neighbors are doing, again, in comparison to that budget, the water budget that was put in the IRWM plan. And
well, I think Mr. Ben Fine from Pismo Beach, California, said it quite well, is that if they leave the formula the way it was, then the surplus pool would be there available for the cities next year. So this motion really did, and I really have to thank Chairman Gibson, which she doesn't get very often, thanks, for bringing it up and restating it and going back to the contracts for Lopez and pointing out the positives of the motion.
And there's another point along that, too, where I think that they didn't recognize was that the Board of Supervisors allocated to everybody, including Oceano, all the water that the cities had requested for the current year. They just did it under two different provisions. One is under surplus, under the historic formulas, and what, you know, is arguably the contractually only formula that's valid. And the second portion was underneath the emergency water provision. And one of the points that I had expressed to them in meetings where, you know, hopefully we would go all hand in hand to the Board of Supervisors, but that didn't quite happen, but was that that emergency declaration for additional water was a really good precedent to happen, because we know that governing boards have wide range of discretion when it comes to emergencies. But we also know that the Lopez contracts already speak to what we might anticipate in an emergency, and they speak to a reduction in the delivery of water. They don't speak to that the board might actually deliver more water in an emergency. They only speak to a reduction in delivery. And so somebody could argue that, hey, the emergency's already been anticipated, and the contracts already identify what happens in an emergency, and that's a reduction in water delivery. But we know, because of the relationship between groundwater and surface water, that sure, there's situations where you're like, no, it's better to use the surface water and preserve groundwater. And so getting that emergency water in the resolution and getting it adopted by the Board of Supervisors was a very good precedent to set, because other situations can develop in other times where the delivery of additional water from the lake during an emergency absolutely makes good sense, and now the precedent has been set. So good action by the board overall. Good action for them to open up the negotiations on the contract to address storage water. And, of course, the fact that they have given us a soft commitment for funding on some of the groundwater efforts is a was a good action as well.
Is staff looking for any board direction on this?
No.
Okay. Any other comments, or should we move on?
Well, I think that we need to keep the issue of water and how the water is calculated and the policies around water and what our policymakers.
Because mutual aid associated with fire services typically is at no cost. You know, if you respond to wildland fires, and the state will reimburse your agency and stuff. But the basic mutual aid is mutual aid and not for not for any remuneration. But on the water and wastewater side, it is done with payment. So you have requesting agencies and responding agencies. And what the agreement that is part of Agenda Item 10D is about is that in water and wastewater systems, when we have emergencies, the ability to call on other agencies for emergency response. And on the very surface of that, that's a good thing. We already know that in situations that develop, Arroyo Grande has responded and helped us. South County Sanitation District has responded and helped us. We've responded and helped other agencies in an informal type of an arrangement. And the agencies have traded money back and forth also to help pay for each other's costs and stuff. So some of that stuff we already do as a practice as opposed to an agreement. One of the benefits of having an actual agreement is really the liability side of stuff if it goes wrong. And what this agreement does is it provides for the requesting agency is responsible for indemnifying the others, basically take the liability associated with the actual incident. However, the responding agency, which is the agency that provides the labor and equipment, is still responsible for their own workman's comp. And that's kind of a really critical liability distinction, because we would never want to be responsible for workman comp for somebody at an AG or another agency that's coming to help us out, because workman's comp is so much tied into what are you doing in training them and other types of things. And if you're a requesting agency, it is our expectation that those who respond know what they're doing when they're responding. We have responsibility over the incident, but our expectation is fair that the employees, that the responding agency covers their own workman's comp. So on the very surface of it, these emergency response agreements are important. Now we take another step, because there's been some discussion about the district's hazardous mitigation plan, or essentially how do we respond in emergencies? And we don't have a plan, and we're not incorporated into the Five Cities Fire Authority's plan. I met with both David Math and Ricky, Heath with Five Cities Fire Authority to make sure I understood the timing of the development of their plan and where they're at. And basically, they're ready to go to their board of directors. And we don't have the ability to get incorporated into their emergency response plan at this point in time. The county has recently updated their emergency response plan as well, and we don't really have the ability to get into their emergency response plan in this particular update. We could go through the effort of creating our own emergency response plan, but I'm not sure that doing that fully provides us with a lot of value, because there's a couple of different details associated with it. One detail is, what do we do about our own operations? And that, I do believe we need to do more planning on, because there's no doubt that if we had something that happened today, even in a significant emergency, my 20-some years of experience on the county's emergency response plan, I would know what to do today in coordinating with other agencies. For example, if you have to call in resources of private contractors or private industry, it would make no sense for us to make those calls directly, because in a big emergency, we would be competing against the phone calls of all the other agencies in the county. And instead, what makes sense in the bigger emergency response scenarios is we call the liaison desk at County EOC, Emergency Operations Center, and state to the county, we have resource needs. They are going to have the most attention from the private contractors to get resources out to us, either as private or from other agencies. So in a big event, that coordination, I already know how to do. And in terms of what do we need to do to, you know, run around, turn off valves if we've got some lines that have blown up or do whatever, there's no doubt Tony knows what to do there and the crews could get out there. But what happens if I'm out of town or if Tony's out of town? And so developing some of those procedures, especially from an operational perspective, is a priority, I think, and something we need to move forward with. But in terms of coordinating with the county and Five Cities Fire, some of that stuff is really, even though we're not technically, you know, got a lot of details, well, nothing in Five Cities Fire really, we are addressed to a limited degree in the county's emergency response plan. And of course, they have the responsibilities for the levees and a lot of other stuff, so they would be here in Oceano. Okay, so getting coordinated with them, and in the future especially, making sure that we've got ourselves ready to coordinate with the other agencies is really important. We're okay now, though, because one, the county itself, because of all the Diablo funding, has got some of the best emergency response procedures in this nation, and they've gone back to the FEMA training headquarters, reimbursed from FEMA. Now, you end up, you know, going to Congresswoman Capps or other federal representatives and say, hey, you know, we really need it, and, you know, FEMA's not being fair. But the point is that when the FEMA people come out, one of the very first questions that they ask is, do you have your mutual aid agreement? So in our county, and I had listed a couple in the staff report, but I was on the phone with Kelly, who is out of Southern California and helps coordinate this. There's about six different regions in California, and we're in the Southern California coastal region. So we knew of City of Arroyo Grande, City of San Luis Obispo, Atascadero Mutual Water Company, and South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. I listed those, I think, in the staff report as about the four. And then Kelly sent me the list of everybody in the Southern California region, and I picked out some others for her that are in our county, which includes Avila Beach Community Services District, CSD, has adopted the agreement. Golden State Water, which actually operates underneath California City's water company, the Central Coast Water Authority, you know, based in Buellton, but still operates in our county as well, and the Napomo Community Services District have all adopted the agreement as well. It's pretty basic, and so when I had a original recommendation, provide direction as you deem appropriate, and as I've followed up this week with Cal Warren and other agencies, my recommendation would be to provide staff direction to sign up the application, work with legal counsel and the board president to get the agreement executed.
I'd support that recommendation. Anybody else? Anybody disagree with that, Karen?
No.
Okay.
Good deal.
Lori?
No, it's, I think it's good. Yeah.
All right. So why don't we give staff that direction? And when do we want to bring this back then?
No, can we adopt it tonight?
No, have to write it first.
No, we have to write it first. This is the sample agreement, if I
Well, I did verify with Kelly that there's no negotiations on the agreement. You know, it's a standardized agreement, you know, but...
So we can make a motion to accept a mutual aid agreement within our neighboring entities who also have mutual aid agreements.
That's not on the agenda tonight. It was just a discussion item, so I think what the...
So you're going to bring it back at the next meeting?
That would be the suggestion.
Great.
We could probably put it on the consent agenda, I would think, because we've
That's my general thought, yes, is that just like the prior issue on NCMA strategic plan, have some prep discussions with your board. If they're really clean, like this particular item is, just to bring it back on the consent agenda and move forward. Obviously, the NCMA strategic plan, those recommendations won't be on the consent agenda.
Right.
But I think this is a good example of one that could come back on the consent agenda.
Could you tell me if our close neighbors also do this mutual aid, mainly Arroyo Grande and Gore Beach?
So it's correct. Arroyo Grande has adopted the agreement.
Yeah, I saw it.
Avila Beach CSD has, South County Sanitation District has, and Napomo CSD has, but Grover Beach and Pismo Beach have not yet. And part of my feedback to them would encourage them to do it as well.
Yeah.
And so you do have a standing meeting of...
NCMA people, yeah.
Well, not NCMA, but is it? Don't you city managers talk to each other, bond at some point?
Yes.
The mayor.
So would you speak to Grover Beach about maybe possibly adopting something similar?
Yeah, I think there's no downside to it, and there's a lot of upside.
Yeah, no, it's only a positive thing.
I think
that
the indemnification agreement and the issue with workers' comp that Mr. Ogren was addressing is reason enough for an upside, because naturally you're already operating in this type of mutual aid environment.
Great.
It's already happening, I think. This is a political reality. So.
CYA.
All right. Yeah, exactly. It's a CYA. We'll move on to the hearing item, item number 11. This is the submittal of resolutions adopting the final budget for fiscal year 2014-2015 and determining the appropriation limitation for fiscal year 2014 and 2015. As we announced at the beginning of the meeting, we will be taking public comment on this issue. Is there any public comment on this particular issue? All right, hearing none, public comment. We'll move on to...
Wait a minute.
I didn't know if you'd left. Ms. Tacker, do you want public comment?
President Guerrero, do you want me to provide a brief staff report prior to public comment?
Sure, go ahead.
Yes, please.
Okay. So one of the things... also, as a matter of procedure, President, adoption of the preliminary budget, then Ms. McGrath took your additional actions, and those were twofold. One is funding for AGP, and the other was the funding of dispatch for Five Cities Fire, incorporated those into the budget per prior board direction, and then it also required us to do some reallocations of the administrative allocations. And so that's essentially what has been done, with some other cleanup and another five that need to be done on the technical corrections. The other thing that I did is on page 16, is I provided a schedule of reserves. That wasn't in the preliminary budget, and typically they're not in the preliminary budget, because a preliminary budget is often simply your revenue and expenditure plan for the following year. And then what we do in adopting the final budget is we close out the prior year in order to know what fund balances are and what our reserves are, and incorporate those numbers into the final budget. Well, on page 16, what you'll notice is I put unaudited in a number of the different areas, because in coming up with these estimates as of June 30th of 2014, I took the June 30th, 2013 audited financial statements, and Marie and I, we ran some profit and loss statements, made some adjustments that we knew were necessary, but it hasn't gone through the full-blown audit. And of course, with the turnover and the fact that, you know, we didn't have an accountant for the last several months, and there's work to be done, I don't have the highest degree of confidence in the June 30th, 2014 numbers. They're still the best estimates that we have at this point in time for the adoption of the final budget. And as we get through the audit, if any of those need to be modified, then we'll come back and report to you. But it's still important, in order to take our best estimates of what we have in reserves for the different funds and to incorporate them in the final budget. And so that's what I've done. Now, I want to point out a couple of things because, for example, on page 16, total estimated ending reserves for the water fund at $619,000, most of that is not going to be in cash. In fact, we don't even know if there's a positive cash balance quite. There is a large prepaid expense associated with prepaying some of our obligations to the county. And so those show up as assets, but they're non-cash assets. And that's the basic important point here, is that fund balance does not mean the same thing as cash in the bank. So I wanted to point that out. I also checked last year's final budget. Reserve numbers weren't in there, so at least, even though there's some uncertainty associated with the unaudited June 30, 2014 numbers, still needed to get that in here. So we've done that. The other thing in my final comment that I want to point out, it wasn't part of the board direction from the preliminary budget, but it's on page 2 or the second page of my staff report, and that's a couple of additional recommendations that I encourage your board to adopt, which would in sense be three then items. One is staff recommendations plus the supplemental technical corrections plus these items 1 and 2 on page 2. And in explaining those, what I want to point to is the idea that in the government code 61110 or whatever that talks about budgeting for community services districts specifically, it speaks to the issue of establishing designated reserves for equipment and establishing designated reserves for contingencies. And the basic idea is, as long as they're established, your board has a lot of discretion to move money around during the year, but they have to be established right up front. The accuracy of the dollar amount and exactly how much you're going to spend isn't as important as making sure that those designations are established. There's also a distinction between a designated reserve and a restricted reserve. So restricted reserves are those that are legally restricted. So we get capital facilities fees from the county, and we're legally restricted for only using those for specific things. Versus a designation comes from water fund, or can come from any source, and it's an intent thing as opposed to a legal restriction item. Now, establishing the designated reserves in the governmental fund or the general fund of the district is important, because what happens is the Budget Act says that if you want to cancel them, that money goes into the governmental fund or the general fund. So if that's going to happen, you establish them in the governmental fund, and that way if you ever want to take that money out, it stays in the governmental fund. What it means also is that you establish it in the governmental fund, but if you want to buy something for water, then we would bring back a budget adjustment like we would anticipate for both the truck and the generator this year in order to show interfund transfers between the governmental fund and the water fund or the sewer fund or whatever it might be. But because the Budget Act says that if you cancel...
funds were hit so hard and declared a disastrous area, right? Those funds were used to rebuild that area.
Yeah.
So what do you think happened to those funds?
Okay, so...
What do you think happened to those reserves? Did they liquefy and go back into the governmental?
Or not?
So
I don't know the answer to that specific question. Two points that I want to make is, one is that in emergencies like natural disasters of that, your board has much more flexibility to, you know, do what it takes in order to recover from the natural disaster, versus these designations are really for... well, are you going to make some equipment purchases that you aren't anticipating? Or do you have other little things that happened you weren't anticipating, which is the need for contingencies? But if you have a big natural disaster, then through those emergencies, you have more flexibility as necessary. But on the point of what happened to those reserves in that particular incident, That's work that I still need to dig into a little bit more. But I'm only going to go back so far because we have June 30, 2013 audited financial statements. So I really have to start with, and that's the beginning of last year, right? Whatever the auditor had come up with, that these are the reserve balances, and we're really talking about restricted reserves because at June 30, 2013, I saw no designations. I only saw restricted reserves. And I've looked at some of the district's paperwork on that, and I've seen some breakout between different restrictions and stuff. But because they're audited at June 30th, 2013, I go with whatever those numbers are that passed the audit at that point in time, because whatever happened before that, the presumption is the auditor figured it out and straightened it out.
Right, and it's been way over 10 years. So,
yeah.
So just so long as they're not out there floating in finance land, that's all I'm concerned about, is that they're not going to pop up at a later date. And then do you think it's wise to set up a reserve fund for capital improvements and an unrestricted reserve fund for capital improvements at the discretion of the board and staff, and then also a reserve fund for the almighty generator?
Yeah, and so with the recommendation of the designated reserve for equipment and infrastructure, then we've got your board covered in the ability to take subsequent action during the year. But those are still going to be subsequent decisions. But that's the point of number one and two on the second page, is so that your board has the ability in 2014-15 to take subsequent actions on things that are not within the budget right now.
Great. So you need a motion?
Well, I just make sure if there's any more questions, we'll ask Director White.
She's
shaking her head. Angelo?
No.
Jennifer? All right. I'll take a public comment on this item then at this time. Is there any public comment? Ms. Tacker? You almost missed your chance earlier, Valley.
Using Oceano Water. I am Julie Tacker, and you know what I didn't hear out loud, and I think you guys need to say this, is that you're adopting a budget that's $281,000 in the red. You got to say it out loud. And I'd like to understand the philosophy, or I'd like you to explain why we aren't working towards a balanced budget. That's the goal in every other community services district and city and everywhere else I know, that we want a balanced budget, and so I want that explained to the public, that why you're adopting something so out of balance. And then I just found a number on May 14th, happened to be the night that Pava was hired. When you had the budget in front of you at that time, most of the work had been done by Jocelyn Hodson, your accountant, and what she was putting in front of you was that you would be $169,000 in the red. So some $130,000+ has been added to the deficit in just these few months. And I think, again, the public deserves an explanation. Your prior item, you talked about the NCMA and the strategic plan. This budget, even though Pavo says you're going to work within the line item, it doesn't touch the contribution that they are asking for over the 5 years. And so, you know, clearly a budget adjustment, but then, you know, magic money has to fall from the sky to be able to pay what they're asking for. And
that level of interest was slammed on that interdepartment loan. So could bring that back, because that was a totally inappropriate recommendation to the board.
So in the adoption of the final budget, I think points of clarification is that the revenue plan and the expenditure plan had already been deliberated by your board when you adopted the preliminary budget. And so this preparation of the final budget is consistent with your prior budget hearings. So there's not really the issue of what are we doing here today in comparison to prior actions. This is based on your prior direction. Now, because in the preliminary budget, you adopt revenue and expenditure plans, and then in the final budget, basically you're taking the action on your final reserves and everything as best as we can estimate them. And that's why I've added in the other recommendations on designated reserves at this time as well. But those, the revenue plan and the spending plan that's in here has already been acted upon and approved by your board. The idea of the interest calculation and the repayment of that loan, I think the best approach to do that is simply not to do anything immediately on it, because I think that in order to best understand how good this budget really is we start that with the first quarter report. What we're already doing is tracking our water consumption, and we're tracking how do our revenue, as we're seeing decreases in water consumption, we're tracking what are we seeing in terms of decreasing water revenues. So this budget, in that revenue plan previously, or the revenue estimates, I should say, that your board previously adopted, had assumed reductions in revenues because of conservation. And so at the first quarter budget evaluation, we'll be able to say how good were those estimates on revenues. In general, our revenues last year beat the target. So our revenues were tracking pretty good. And what I've seen so far, it seems like there's a fairly decent chance that our actual revenues are going to be higher than what the budget estimates are.
Right.
But that's also based on a very preliminary review that I've done, you know, without really digging into the details. So, you know, again, the revenue and the spending plan previously adopted by your board during the adoption of the preliminary budget, how good are the numbers? We start that analysis with the first quarter review, which I would target bringing to the Finance and Audit Committee first in October, and then hopefully being here for your board's review at the second meeting in October. That's certainly one of my priority focuses right now. So defer any of the loan repayments, because it certainly is going to be within your board's discretion. As we see how the budget is actually tracking, it might beg the question as to whether or not you have to defer that loan repayment or not. So we would never want to do that right out of the chute. We want to see how the budget is doing and then work that timing during the year if, in fact, cash flow will be able to accommodate it.
I move
we still have, we haven't, yeah, Giselle still has an opportunity. Ms. Naylor, would you like to make public comment at this time?
Yeah. You're talking about the budget, so I'm going to bring up two issues. One, Mr. Ogren talked about emergency management plans. Is that in the budget, and is it on the agenda? My feeling is no. I might be wrong. But also, since Mr. Ogren raised the issue, I handed a question to the attorney, because that's a violation of the Brown Act. If somebody brings up subject matter and Mary Lucy is ready to make a resolution approving, oh, let's join other cities in an emergency management plan, the public has a right to comment on that. So getting back to the budget, maybe we could save money, because I think there already is an emergency management plan that was worked out between the Office of Emergency Management and the Sheriff's Department. In an emergency, the Sheriff's Department and this area would be a meeting ground for emergency vehicles. So I may be wrong on that, but my suggestion is maybe we could save money that way.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Thank you, Ms. Naylor. We'll close public comment at this time, and I'll entertain a motion. There's a staff recommendation, the technical corrections, and the recommendations that are on page 2.
I move to accept the staff recommendations with and the...
I'm sorry, Director Lucy, but there's two resolutions, so you probably would want to do each one separately.
Well, then I don't want to make it.
There's the first one, which is the submittal of resolutions adopting the final budget. And
right.
Then
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
That carries by a vote of 5-0. The next one is Resolution 2014-10, Determination of Appropriation Limitation for the 2014-2015 fiscal year. I'll move to approve.
Second.
All right. Marie?
President Guerrero?
Yes.
Vice President Lucy?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Thank you, everybody. That passes by a vote of 5-0.
I love her chair.
Mary loves her chair. We'll move on. Utility items. Actually, we did. I have a question. We had a utility item included in our packet, which was the WillServe extension for Ellsworth, and it's not on the agenda.
Yeah. It's on the consent agenda.
Okay, good. Thank you. Oh, yeah, because it was item C. Thank you very much.
Thank you for redoing the budget. I really appreciate it.
We'll go to closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6, Conference with Labor Negotiators, Agency Designated Representative, Vice President Mary Lucy.
Do you want to take public comment on before closed session?
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Employee Organization, Service Employees International Union 620. Is there any public comment on this? Right. Seeing none, we'll adjourn. It is 9:19. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. We'll adjourn to closed session. All right. It's 9:19 p.m.
Okay.